And now for our feature presentation.
Now, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience,
it's my pleasure to bring to you somebody that's for the real people.
Wake up, wake up, wake up. Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake. This is
Midday Jazz and Justice on the Liberated Masses Medium of WPFW 89.3 FM from Washington, D.C. to the world.
Hey, hey, old bean. And you too, baby. This is Uncle Tom, Commander-in-Chief of your Black Freedom Fighters in North America, bringing you the latest news from your fighting black underground. Hang on, brothers and sisters. Liberation is near. It's almost time. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Blast off.
I'm Jared Ball, your host, here with you every Monday from 1 to 3, and happy to be so. We have a great show coming up to you this afternoon, a packed 2 hours chock full of music and discussion. Brother Netfer Freeman is going to join us in a little bit to help us to have a discussion with some other cats about Afro-Latin America and what's going on there politically and musically. But then the rest of the show is going to be dedicated again to our sort of vantage point, looking at Labor Day. So we're going to talk a little bit about socialism, a little bit about the condition of labor and working people, a little bit about police brutality and the context in which that's all taking place and really just too prevalently occurring, and many other things. So again, we have a lot of great music coming up. And we're going to start with this Labor Day treat, looking at Reverend Wright and recontextualizing a little bit of what he has been demonized for saying, and see just how accurate or inaccurate it may be. So we have a lot more coming up, so don't go anywhere. This is Midday Jazz and Justice, a lot of great music, a lot of great politics. Well, we'll even open up the phones to get your commentary and response a little bit later. So don't go anywhere. We have a great sort of supplement to your Labor Day if you're cooking out, if you're hanging out, if you're relaxing or whatever. This will be a great conversation starter. Let's get some stuff to get your head nodding. A whole lot of great stuff coming up. So don't go anywhere. Midday Jazz and Justice. I'm Jared Ball. Most importantly, this is the Liberated Masses Medium of WPFW 89.3 FM, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. to the world. Back in just a minute. Don't go anywhere. Peace.
Let's start off with Martin Luther King, the sad anniversary of his death today. But I was interested to note that a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Reverend Wright, the guy who caused Barack Obama so much pain, Hillary Clinton said his speech was hate speech. That was her word, her phrase, hate speech. And then I looked at some of Dr. King's quotes. He said America was founded on genocide, and a nation that is founded on genocide is destructive. He was talking about Vietnam. He said the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government. He said the vast majority of white Americans are racist, either consciously or unconsciously. Everyone's making speeches in behalf of Martin Luther King today, but aren't these the same kind of sentiments that are being expressed by the Reverend Wright, who apparently... Well,
what Malcolm X said when he got silenced by Elijah Muhammad was in fact true. America's chickens are coming home. Comanche, the Arapaho, the Navajo. Terrorism. We took Africans from their country to build our way of ease and kept them enslaved and living in fear. Terrorism. We bombed Grenada and killed innocent civilians, babies, non-military personnel. We bombed the black civilian community of Panama with stealth bombers and killed unarmed teenagers and toddlers, pregnant mothers and hard-working fathers. We bombed Gaddafi's home and killed his child. We bombed Iraq. We killed unarmed civilians trying to make a living. We bombed a plant in Sudan to pay back for the attack on our embassy. Killed hundreds of hard-working people, mothers and fathers who left home to go that day not knowing that they never get back home. We bombed Hiroshima. We bombed Nagasaki. And we bombed far more than the thousands in New York and the Pentagon. And we never batted an eye. Kids playing in the playground, mothers picking up children after school, civilians, not soldiers, people just trying to make it day by day. We have supported state terrorism against the Palestinians and black South Africans, and now we are indignant because the stuff we have done overseas is now brought right back into our own front yard. America's chickens are coming home.
But why is the bank committing so much of its capital and resources to the sale of these missiles?
It's a test. Small arms are the only weapons used in 99% of the world's conflicts. And no one has the capacity to manufacture them faster and cheaper than China. What Skarsen is attempting to do is to make the IBBC the exclusive broker of Chinese small arms to the Third World. And the missile deal is the gateway transaction.
Yeah, but billions of dollars invested simply to be a broker. There can't be that much profit for them.
No, this is not about making profit from weapon sales. It's about control.
Control the flow of weapons, control the conflict.
No. No, no. The IBBC is a bank. Their objective isn't to control the conflict. It's to control the debt that the conflict produces. You see, the real value of a conflict, the true value, is in the debt that it creates. You control the debt, you control everything. You find this upsetting, yes? But this is the very essence of the banking industry. To make us all, whether we be nations or individuals, slaves to debt.
The Madrig speaks and the Panther walks from Eric Dolphy right here on WPFW 89.3 FM. Midday Jazz and Justice. I'm Jared Ball, your host, here with you every Monday from 1 to 3. Before that, we heard a little bit from Reverend Wright, giving some important context to this nation's history that we'll be coming back to talk about in just a little bit. It's from the last release of Paris, a great MC from the West Coast, put Reverend Wright to music. Before that, we heard a clip from the movie The International, Making Us All Slaves to Debt. A great scene talking about international banking and the role and the function of banks in today's society, something seeming eerily relevant to today. And at the top of the show, of course, we heard our intro from Hugh Masekela. The track is called Is Anybody Out There from the album Stimella in 1973. We're going to take a quick break and come back in just a moment with Brother Netfer Freeman, WPFW's own Netfer Freeman, and some very special guests to talk about all things related to Afro-Latin America. So just hang on just a few more minutes. We'll be back in just a minute right here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Midday Jazz and Justice. Peace. WPFW 89.3 FM, Midday Jazz and Justice. You know, welcome again to the program, Netfer. It's always good to have you on with us. Welcome.
Well, brother, thank you for having me on. I'm very honored. I love your program. So
well, I appreciate it.
I'm a fan of the program, even though I can be on my own. But
and an unofficial contributor, too. We should let folks know that you contribute in various ways to the content of this program. Well, so we move on, have you seen Holly Garima's Tezza film?
No, I have not.
Okay.
But I plan to go see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we want to let folks know, because I haven't seen it either, but I know he went through some trials and tribulation. The well-recommended, the well-awarded film. It was highly acclaimed is the phrase I was looking for. Mm-hmm. Film that outdid a lot of the popular Hollywood films in terms of awards internationally. The popular Hollywood films like The Reader and The Wrestler that were highly touted lost in competition, head-to-head competition with Tezza in terms of its quality, but it couldn't had a hard time getting screenings. not shockingly, unfortunately. No. So we do want to let people know that they can catch the premiere screening of Tezza, and I hope to be there, at the Avalon Theater on Thursday, September 17th at 8 p.m., followed by a Q&A with director Haile Garima and the cast. Haile Garima, most famous for Sankofa, the film, and also the book and cultural shop on Georgia Avenue across there from Howard.
Which film he opens up to the community. Lots of great events, Black August events, and
that's
all
right.
That.
That's right. Very open to the community. He's highly involved in educating next generation filmmakers and everything. So the premiere celebration for Tezza continues on Friday, September 18th from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. with a special rap party at, is it Live Nightclub? Live? I don't even know what this is.
I think it's Live.
It's a hot club. That's probably why I don't know anything about it.
in my
antiquated self. But Live Nightclub located at 11th and U Streets Northwest, just above Bohemian Caverns. With now that I'm familiar with. All right. Mm-hmm. For more information, visit us online at wpfw.org and come support this film and its filmmaker. Without further ado, Netfer, I know we have some special guests. Go ahead and tell us who we're going to be talking to.
Well, we're going to talk to one person, but there we have two gentlemen here from Venezuela, and they are. One is Professor Geronimo Sanchez, who's the director of the Institute. I'm going to say it in Spanish because I really don't know the Instituto Universitario de Barlovento. So Barlovento is like this province in Venezuela that's most that's a predominantly African province, and he's the director of the of what is known as the one of the only like a black historically black universities in Latin America and obviously in Venezuela, and also the assistant director, Professor Alejandro Correa, who should be the person who's on the line with us, and we've invited they've come here to the United States. They're doing some exchange programs and some networking to build this exchange program that they have going with students between Venezuela and here. And we have them speaking at a couple places by the time they arrive to D.C. on Wednesday. They'll be at the Institute for Policy Studies that's September 9th from 6:45 to 8:45, or from 6:45 to 9 o'clock p.m. And they'll be talking to us about Afro-Venezuelans and how the Bolivarian Revolution led by Hugo Chavez is faring for black people in Venezuela, and the history. They're very, very versed in the history of blacks in Latin America particularly in Venezuela. And we're going to hear them talk about that. And also their, efforts to try to enhance education about African people in Latin America in the British educational system there. So that's once at September 9th, Wednesday, from 6:45 at IPS, 1112 16th Street, and then again on the University of Maryland's College Park campus, Saturday the 12th, which is from 1 p.m. to 3 in the Jimenez Building, room 102. And so, I think we have Professor Alejandro Correa on the line. Brother Alejandro, are you there?
Yes, I do.
Hey, how are you?
Fine, and you? How you been?
I'm good. And we just let people know I had the privilege and the honor of meeting Professor Alejandro Correa and Geronimo Sanchez when I went to Venezuela earlier in June. And it was a very enlightening trip. I actually visited the University of Barlovento. Professor Correa, can you first tell us maybe, because we have a little bit of time, maybe if you what I think most people might be interested in is you can give us a overview or a brief of how African or people of African descent in Venezuela feel about the Bolivarian Revolution and this new and you know I guess the changes that are going on and what it means for African people in Venezuela.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Regarding your questions, it's important to highlight that today, in the most highly representative region of Venezuela, where African presence is high, the support for the Venezuelan Revolution is huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in all of these counties, all the candidates that represent the option of the revolution, in terms of the mayor office or in terms of the representative for Congress, always has won during the past 10 years. And of course, in that region, the vote for President Chavez always has been high through all different electoral processes that have been occurring in Venezuela during the last 10 years. In addition, the Afro-Venezuelan community has been acknowledged during this government through the new law of education that we have, and also in the different initiatives that for agriculturals, for farmers, have been developed in the country. Mm-hmm. And most of our Afro-Venezuelan regions are regions where farmers live. So they feel that something from the government is changing in terms of a new perception, in terms of a new approach to support and to involve African descendants in politics.
Mm-hmm.
That never happened again with so intensity like is happening now before the revolution.
good. Can you, now one thing, we'll wrap this up because we want also people to, we want to give people a teaser and then have them come out and hear you and Professor Sanchez on Wednesday and Saturday. But can, I found very interesting the history of Coriepe when we were there in that festival that that we attended. Can you tell people about that? I was, as we were talking, I was I also need probably a little clarity of my own, and it seems that Coriepe is either the first town established in Venezuela by, or was it the first town established by Afro-Venezuelan? And I'm, can you just give us some background on?
Yes, in Venezuela, by 1812, the Spaniards, colonial ruler of the country, they did a census, and they found that 58% of the population were black because they were in slavery. We can totally assume that they were black. Today, that statistic is not so different. We've seen that around 60% of the Venezuelan people are of African ancestors. And that particular town that you visit, Coriepe, was established in 1721 by three black Venezuelans. They went to Spain, they struggled during 21 years, and they got a royal edict from the king of Spain of the day, and they founded that town in that place. So it's the first legally founded black town in Venezuela, okay, and might be one of the first in South America.
Oh, okay. Now, I noticed also, which was curious to me, that a lot of the, well, can you tell us about the festival, too? And the color of the festival is red. A lot of people were wearing red. But I also noticed that that seems to be the color adopted by the Bolivarian Revolution. So is there, is that just coincidence? Is there a relationship to that? Can you explain?
Well, that was a coincidence because historically, the a color of the festival has been red because the color of San Juan Festival historically has been the red.
Mm-hmm.
But because historically also red has been the color of the left, that came as a coincidence that both colors now are the same. But in that particular town, every 24th of June, everybody tried to wear a red outfit just to pay homage to San Juan, which is the patron saint of the town, in which honor that festival is held.
And the central, I noticed the central, the very African culture is very central to the celebrations there, the drum and the dance and things like that.
Exactly, yes. With such a long-running presence of Venezuelans, of African descendants, we are in Venezuela since the 16th century, and we have kept traditions in terms of African tradition, in terms of the food, the dance, the music. That is an integral part of what we call the Afro-Venezuelan identity, or at large, the Venezuelan identity. There is no possibility of having a Venezuelan identity without the African trace that we have in heritage from our ancestor that came from Africa in the century, in the 16th century.
Mm-hmm. Professor Correa, one last question. If you can probably tell people, what brings you to the United States? I know you maybe want to tell people about the exchange programs and things that you're trying, that you want to get off the ground or keep going.
Of course, yes. Well, we have been invited by the University of North Carolina, a Stone Center for African Black Culture and History, which is led by Professor Joseph Jordan, which is an academic that really has been visiting us during the last 5 years. We now have signed a memorandum of understanding with the University of North Carolina, and that memorandum of understanding covers the bringing of students from our university, and also UNC students will go to Venezuela in an exchange, academic exchange. For the future, professors of both institutions will be traveling to each country to share, to learn about each other. And that way we can build a bridge of understanding and a bridge based on knowledge of each other.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Correa, for your time, and please give Dr. Sanchez and Joseph Jordan my greetings. And we again want to remind people that this Wednesday, Saturday, September 9th, from 6:45 to 9 p.m. at the Institute for Policy Studies. You will be able to hear firsthand Dr. Correa and Dr. Sanchez talk about all types of things, Latin American history and Venezuelan, Afro-Venezuelan history, and then this exchange program. Also, at the same time, Saturday, the same, I guess, a repeat of the same program, those who may not be able to make it Wednesday, Saturday at University of Maryland College Park in the Jimenez Building, from 1 to 3 p.m. You can also come there. That's room 102. And for more information, visit hotsalsa.org or call me at 202-787-5229.
All right. Thank you both very much. I appreciate that. We all appreciate that. Thank you very much. Good luck with the program. This is Midday Jazz and Justice on WPFW 89.3 FM. We're going to take a quick break and come back and sort of piggyback on what the brothers were just talking about there in terms of an American perspective on student involvement in issues related to the African world. So we're going to come back and deal with that in just a moment. And then perhaps later on, open up the phone lines and get into a discussion with our wonderful listeners. Plus, we have a whole lot, bunch more great music coming up as well. So don't go anywhere. This is Midday Jazz and Justice. I'm Jared Ball, your host, here with you every Monday from 1 to 3 p.m. Back in just a minute on the Liberated Masses medium of WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington.
It's an example. You see, your students, either by accident or coincidence. But you're black, and that's a fact. You're oppressed, and that's a fact. And to deal with the reality of that oppression, you must begin to look at your situation as students, secondary, and as being oppressed first. And the skills that you acquire as a result of being education, how can we utilize those skills to eliminate that oppression? That becomes the question for students. Again, when you begin to understand the whole system of education in this country, see, whatever you don't control can be used as a weapon against you. Anything that you don't control can be used as a weapon against you. Education has been used as a weapon against black people because black people have been trained to think a certain way. See, we do not control politics, so politics as it's known in this country is a weapon against black people. And we begin to examine what politics is, we find out it's no more than the apex of white cultural aggression. Nothing more. When a man tells you that you can only become free through voting, then he is restricting your mobility. He's restricting your freedom. You were born free. You must exercise your rights to be free. That man cannot give you freedom. But when he restricts an individual and tells him that he can only become free by voting, then he has denied you your freedoms. He says, this is politics. The only way you can become free is by being political in the white sense or in the sense of this country. But politics in this country, you see, the whole thing, it refers again back to what Camus once raised. He says, what better way to enslave a man than give him the vote and call him free? Does black people absolutely no good to be able to vote unless we can choose who we're voting for? Then when it goes down and you begin to dwell and look further into the political system of this country, you find out that there is no political party that's anti-property. So where do we fit in? Whether that property is us, or whether that property is land, or whether that property is a Cadillac, or whether that property is a credit card. No party in this country is anti-private property. Anti-gain, personal gain, no party. So where does black people and oppressed people fit into a political system like that? That tells us that we must begin to reevaluate the whole connotation that's been given to politics in this country. The politics does not mean the Republican and Democratic Party. Politics does not mean the city and state government. Politics goes into something much further beyond that. Politics goes into what happens to your life every day. You see, it's a political decision that most black people in Harlem are junkies. That's a political decision. It's a political decision that black people were forced to be athletes. That's a political decision. It's a political decision that black people cannot occupy offices, or high offices in this country as they are called. That's a political decision. But note here, not that, you know, that would make any difference in terms of the whole thing of black people occupying offices. Because when you begin to understand the type of system that operates in this country, then you understand that it is not the individual who manipulates the system. It's the system who manipulates that individual. See, if Cleaver or Dick Gregory had become president in this country, it would make absolutely no difference. Because America would still be in the war in Vietnam. because the country operates off what's known as the military-industrial complex, which says that war is profitable, which says that USS Steel must make steel for tanks, because over 70% of the people employed in this country are either directly or indirectly employed by the military. That's the politics of the economy of this country. When oppressed people began to evaluate politics, we must understand that we have to create a politics that's relevant to us. We must create a politics that's relevant to our lifestyle. We must create a politics that's relevant to what we do every day. So when we talk about politics, when we talk about the political reality of the black community, we are talking about something that's beyond Democratic and Republican Party. And in that sense, we must understand that we must incorporate a revolutionary ideology that pushes this type of political know-how and political knowledge in the black community.